included in the package. Ambassador Dio is going to actually expand much more on what is contained within the legal advice. And overall, I would just want to report that the charter has been found not to be in conflict with any of our domestic law. In our recommendation, we are actually we are recommending that this committee should take note of the content of the charter and endorse that it should be presented to Parliament for signature and ratification. And then again, we are also recommending that the signed and ratified charter should be submitted to the Legal Department of the African Union Commission. And then in conclusion, you know, part of the clause in the charter actually indicates that the charter may be amended or revised if any member state makes a written request to that effect to the chairperson of the commission. But then the amendment shall be approved by a simple majority of the member states. And the ratified charter shall come into force 30 days after being deposited as part of the 15 ratified instruments. Our country is also guilty of the fact that the charter is has not entered into force because we have not done our part in that regard. I thank you.
Thank you. And I'm giving over to the Department of Foreign Affairs. And if you're done with your presentation, then we will continue with the questioning and answering.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson, honorable members of the committee, colleagues from the presidency. I don't know where my presentation is on the electronic version. With your permission, may I then proceed, Madam Chairperson?
Yes, you can proceed while they're sitting.
Thank you very much. As has been indicated by my colleague from the Presidency, the African Youth Charter, of course, was adopted by the Assembly of the African Union in July 2006. And one of the concerns is that South Africa has to date not yet signed nor ratified the charter. Of course, the internal process of consultations between government departments and stakeholders does tend to take a fairly long period of time, and the legal advice becomes quite a critical component as well in guiding us as to whether we are in a position to move forward with the signing and ratification of any of our international conventions. In this respect, based on the legal advice we have received from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor and the Department of Justice, I shall raise a few of the issues of concern or gray areas that have been brought to our attention. If we look at Article 13.4, this article provides that state parties with a view to achieving the right to education of good quality shall provide free and compulsory basic education and take steps to minimize the indirect costs of education. Now, this, according to the law advisors, implies the provision of immediate and not progressive implementation. However, the Department of Education has indicated that currently education is free and compulsory to all learners from the ages of 7 to 15. At secondary level and further, this is being done progressively, and it is mainly because of the burdensome nature of the issue to state resources. Now, in this respect, it must be noted that while the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights contains such a right, all rights in the covenant must be read with Article 2.1, which provides that parties to the covenant undertake to take steps, amongst others, to provide the maximum of its available resources with a view to achieving progressively the full realization of the rights recognized in the covenant. Another article, which is Article 13.4p, was raised as a concern, and it provides that states shall adopt preferential recruitment policies for African youth with specialized skills among state parties. And according to the legal advisors, this provision, especially when read with Article 2.1 on non-discrimination on inter alia national origin, seems to suggest that youth from other African countries should be beneficiaries of preferential recruitment policies, thus competing with South Africans on equal footing. Of course, the Department of Home Affairs indicated that this should be done in line with paragraphs D and E of the preamble of the Immigration Act. If I may expand on that one, Chairperson, the preamble to the Immigration Act 2002, Act Number 13 of 2002, stipulates that the Act aims at setting in place a new system of immigration control which ensures that economic growth is promoted through the employment of needed foreign labor, foreign investment is facilitated, the entry of exceptionally skilled or qualified people is enabled, skilled human resources are increased, academic exchanges within the Southern African Development Community is facilitated, and tourism is promoted and the role of the Republic in the continent and in the region is recognized. It was also indicated that the provision is not repugnant to national policies pertaining to the employment of foreigners, and that, in fact, it is a precondition for the adherence to the call which already exists in the form of the Act I have just quoted from Home Affairs, the Immigration Act of 2002. A further concern, then, that was brought to our attention is the Article number 15. This article provides that every, and I quote, young person shall have the right to gainful employment, unquote. Now, if one looks at the Article 7 of the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, the provision is made for everyone has the right to just and favorable conditions of work. Whilst the South African Constitution, Act 108 of 1996, in sections 22 and 23 respectively, provide that every citizen has the right to choose their trade and profession freely, while also allowing everyone the right to fair labor practices. Article 15.4d provides that the state shall ensure that curricula are aligned to the needs of the employment labor market. According to the legal advice, this may be problematic due to the extent that it includes tertiary education, and it is not clear whether the state would have the powers to implement some of the obligations contained in this article. We move on then to Article 16.2J. Provision is made, and I quote, that legislative steps such as banning advertising, increasing price, etc., to control the consumption of tobacco, exposure to environmental tobacco, and alcohol abuse, unquote. The legal advice suggests that whilst the objectives are very laudable in this article, this provision may have implications for other rights, such as the right to freedom of expression. On Article 21, Article 21 provides that state parties or parties shall recognize the right of young people to live anywhere in the world. Now, whereas this is followed by the unpacking, it is not clear whether this provision is intended to function as a free movement of persons clause, and if so, then it preempts what the African Union is currently working on regarding the free movement of people in Africa, as contained in the draft strategic framework for migration policy in Africa. I would add that a further concern would be that how would one enforce or be able to implement the right of African youth to live anywhere in the world? We will certainly require the cooperation of many of the other countries and continents, and I think we are all aware of some of the approaches to Africans migrating to their continents and countries. Madam Chair, those were the main concerns which the legal advisors from Chief State Law Advisor's Office and the Department of Justice were able to lift, and of course the comments from our sister departments of Education and Home Affairs. I do believe that the presidency was still awaiting input from the Department of Labor. As regards the process for signature and accession or ratification, subject to the comments, the Charter is an agreement within the context of Section 2312 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, and as such, Parliament must approve the Charter before South Africa can sign and or ratify the Charter. In terms of Article 30, the Charter needs to be acceded to by parties that have not signed it. Now, accordingly, as has been mentioned by my colleague, we have got 30 countries that have signed, 16 who ratified, but 12 who deposited the instruments of ratification. If the other three countries that have ratified do deposit their instruments to the legal section of the African Union Commission, then South Africa will have to accede to this convention. The Line Function Department, of course, being the presidency which leads on this issue, has taken it to cabinet level and obtained approval, and therefore the next step would be to have the matter placed on the roll for Parliament to discuss and to endorse, and then of course it goes to the NCOP and we're in a position to sign. Chairperson, I will stop there for now, and I thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you for both the department and the presidency for their briefing. I'm going to...
Thank you.
Thank you for your presentations. I'm going to open the floor to the honourable members to ask questions. I also do have questions that I want to ask. First of all, from my side, your concerns that were brought up by the legal department, must Parliament wait for those concerns to be resolved before we rectify it? So it means that, like you said, that the Department of Labor, we're still waiting for their comments and their inputs to this charter. Or must we still wait to get their comments before Parliament will ratify this? And then also what I would like to ask, like the tobacco concern that was raised in that article, but there are other rights that are contradicting as well, that contradicts, like the age of the youth. In the charter that what it will cover. It's 14 to 35. In South Africa, it's an adult age is 18. 18 onwards can then smoke. And when we informed them that we ratified this document, this charter, with the considerations that from the age of 18 upwards can then smoke, because this covers then from 14 to 35, because we can't stop adults that we consider as adults from the age of 18 that they can smoke. Like you said, that the Constitution allows freedom of expression. So how do we then comment on this if we would be asked this question? And then, when the charter is ratified, then we, 15 states, have done it, and then 1 month after, then we implement it. And the period of time to report back to the African Union, is it 18 months? What is the time period for us to report back? I'm going to hold my other questions over to the other members to ask their questions. I see Honourable Moss and Honourable Andrew.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Happy 2009 to all of you. Chairperson, yes, the issue of age to me is very important. I would like to hear from the Youth Commission what is their position on the age, because that's been something that we've been talking for some time now, in terms of when are you a youth, when are you an adult, and all that. When can you work? Because age, in all those issues to me, is very important. But in the presentation that we got from the presidency, it's mentioned there about internal processes that South Africa is also experiencing. It seems to me it could be some problematically, or that could delay, contribute to the delay. I just want to elaborate and what the issues are. When you say that this internal process, which seems it could retard the process or delaying, because we can't just sign and there's those outstanding issues or rectify or issues that we are not aware of that hasn't been resolved as yet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I wish to echo the congratulatory message from Honorable Moss and wish everyone a very fruitful, happy, and healthy 2009, especially our ambassador, who is seated to my right hand. Chair, I must indicate that I'm feeling a bit concern because I did not pick up in any of the articles any reference made to disabled youth. Now, I know when we speak of youth, we include disabled youth. But this generalization normally is also in practice an exclusion. If you do not make specific mention of the most marginalized and undeveloped section of the youth or society, but youth in particular, yeah, then you tend to forget them. That is the one area of concern that I have. I also want to, the ambassador did mention that the line department here is the presidency. Now, one would want to assume that the presidency, and perhaps I can just get a confirmation for that, would assume responsibility for the harmonizing or the harmonization of legislation if when we ratify this charter, Chair. You have raised the other questions I wanted to raise with regard to the legal advice that the Department of Foreign Affairs have indicated whether the ratification at parliamentary level must wait until those matters have been sufficiently resolved. I understand that Cabinet probably have already approved it. Now, does it mean Cabinet's consent to it, is it inclusive of those concerns? Where Cabinet decided, no, we must do away with it, or we are not hamstrung by those concerns, Chairperson. Also, Chair, Article 8 makes reference to the issues of marriage of young men and women of full age with free consent. What would be the indicator for free consent to marriage? I think the issue of age, Honorable Moss have raised it because there is some discrepancy between the UN, it is 15 to 24, ourselves, 14 to 35, as well as the AU, the charter, 15 to 35. There is this particular discrepancy. Thank you. That's all for now. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mahlila. We will give you the opportunity to answer questions now, and then we'll give another round for questions. Thank you very much.
Yes, sorry, Chair. There's an issue of tobacco. I do know that the ambassador has raised this issue of it may conflict with freedom of expression. We indeed have a tightened tobacco laws last year, and we know there's a complete total ban on advertising. We actually also started to deal with electronic advertising because we know our youth in particular have more and more access to the internet, etc. You see, so clearly, I think the provision here is quite fine. It has to be for your purposes. One needs to literally ban Ambassador tobacco uses, you see, but at least we must now ban advertising. And I think we're also looking currently at the issue of alcohol, because I think we must get onto par. We can't just focus on tobacco. We have very progressive laws with regard to that, but then we give the South African breweries a complete card blanche. I'm just making a reference to the SAB. But clearly, I think the provision that literally speaks about banning advertising, I don't think it's in contradiction with the principle of freedom of expression at times. What your expression must be limited for your own good health, chairperson, and the health of the nation. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Over to the Presidency and the Department of Foreign Affairs.
Okay, thank you. In terms of the questions which have been raised, regarding the definition of youth, the Charter indeed defines youth as those between the ages of 15 to 35, whereas domestically we are saying youth is between the age of 14 to 35. This does not actually present a challenge, as South Africa's definition of youth is narrower than that of the than the one contained in the African Youth Charter. And then the other question was regarding whether or not we must wait for other departments. What I would want to report on is that the charter has been presented to the social clusters, where departments like labor are also represented in the social cluster. Whereas we have not received response from them, the social cluster indeed endorsed, and you know, cabinet as a whole also endorsed that the charter should be signed and ratified. And then on matters which have been raised by the legal advice regarding you know, concerns such as gainful employment of young people, cabinet actually agreed that these matters should actually be treated in similar manner as provisions of our Bill of Rights, particularly on socio-economic rights, which where broad statements of intent has to be, where we are actually saying some of the rights have to be progressively realized. So this should actually be the case even with regard to the charter, that there must be a progressive realization of the rights. And the same sentiment was actually echoed by the former president when we presented to the Presidential Youth Working Group that we will not be able to realize some of the provisions of the charter immediately, but then, you know, there will be incremental realization of all the provisions of the charter. And then the question on reference to disabled youth. Article 24 of the African Youth Charter actually makes reference to mentally and challenged youth, and I think that actually implies in our context people with disabilities. And I think on internal processes, what I can say, I was just referring to the fact that we have already been delayed because this has been on the table since 2007. So by internal processes, I meant that, you know, processing to different structures such as your social cluster, also consulting with different government departments, which is a process that we are saying that whereas it delayed us, it was indeed a necessary process. So that's why I was actually explaining why we delayed since 2007 to date, that we have not actually ratified and signed and ratified the charter.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. If I can add to what my colleague has already said, let me pick up on the issue of gainful employment and the concerns of the legal advisors. As was pointed out at the beginning of the presentation by my colleague, this charter is a political and a legal document. Now, certainly the legal advisors look at it purely from the legal context, whereas it would require to be seen within a certain political context as well. We do not believe that there is any serious contradiction between what is contained in the Charter and what South Africa and the government wishes to achieve regarding the development of the youth. It would therefore require a bit of flexibility in the interpretation of what gainful employment, for example, would infer compared to what is currently provided for in terms of creating favorable conditions and employment opportunities for the youth. However, one must also, we believe at Foreign Affairs, look at this issue in the context of 53 African countries which would be bound to this charter, and if 15 of them have already ratified it and 30 signed, I don't believe that we would have any good reason to say that the interpretation of gainful employment vis-a-vis what we have as a provision is sufficient grounds to not sign or accede to the charter. Having said that, let me turn to the point raised on the advertising of smoking and alcohol products. Certainly, we have, I believe, taken a very progressive stance on the regulation of these industries vis-a-vis the accessibility, the profile that they have, the advertising, and hence the impact on the youth. Other countries in the north have learned from our example and have therefore adopted our best practices in this regard. The legal concern is simply that there would be some kind of an impact on the freedom of expression aspect. But certainly in South Africa, Chairperson and honorable members, we do regulate industries through consultative processes and other avenues available, and then legislate accordingly. Certainly we can't please all people all the time, but the responsibility, of course, rests with government. So there isn't necessarily any threat to freedom of expression, whereas maybe the tobacco and alcohol industry may wish to portray it as such. I think that takes care of the questions that I needed to answer. Thank you.
I think there was a question on time frames, reporting back once ratified, and time for implementation. What is the time frame for the country to report back once the implementation happens of the charter?
Yeah, thank you. The time frames are not clearly stipulated, but we have ministerial meetings every 2 years, and of which we, you know, different member states are actually expected to report on progress. So I will assume that it will be every 2 years. So, thank you.
Before I ask for more questions, I just want to ask a follow-up on the disability one. I don't know, Comrade Mardella, are you satisfied with that response that you got? Maybe, I don't know if you want to follow up on that one. I also see that mentioned in the charter, under the preamble, I think page one, the second paragraph, it says, guided by, and it gives you a whole list. Okay, now my question there, to cover disability, because this parliament obviously ratified the UN Convention on Disabled People, can, you know, with all the other conventions, and I think it should somehow make statement to that convention, must be made somehow a reference here within this, you know, so that we as disabled people can also then, you know, be satisfied that that convention is actually with, covered within this one as well. Then Article 2, and I will read it here. Article 2, number 1. Race, ethnic groups, color, race, and so forth and so forth. And there should be included disability, and I don't see that there. It's not there. It talks about other status. I don't want to assume that disability is an other state, is an other status. You know, and it's not mentioned. Disability is not mentioned there. Yeah. Honorable Andrew, do you want to climb in here?
Yes, yes, Chair. I've looked at Article 24. Indeed, one probably do not have a indication of a definition, because clearly it's not defined under definition. So when we speak of physically challenged and mental challenged, one may be somehow overlooking other forms of disability, especially if one looks at how it's defined in the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Disabled Persons, you see. So one is a bit concerned about that particular aspects, Chairperson, that is the one thing. The other thing I assume that the line department, which is the presidency, would be taking full responsibility for coordination, especially harmonizing this charter with legislation, etc. You see, but the presidency haven't actually confirmed their full responsibility with regard to that, especially in the context that we also have the Youth Commission, we have the National Youth Development Agency that we are busy with now, Chairperson. What will be the kind of interlinkages with those kind of very important statutory bodies, of course, and the youth desk in the presidency, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Honourable Member. The concerns that have been raised have been taken note of. I just want to report that implementation of the Charter should not be seen as going to be the separate process in our country, which, like we have said, that when working on the National Youth Policy, the National Youth Commission and the Presidency made an effort to ensure that there is alignment between the provisions of the National Youth Policy, the draft National Youth Policy, and the African Youth Charter. And, you know, I just want to comment that the policy is out for public comments now. So I will think that in our context, maybe we need to ensure that, you know, legislation such as guidelines such as your UN Convention on Disabled People need to be included within that. You know, moreover, I think, yes, indeed, we are responsible, you know, the National Youth Commission, ourselves, we are also responsible to ensure that there is harmonization with existing legislation. And on the definition of mentally and challenge, when I was actually talking to the ambassador, he said that he doesn't envisage that, you know, if such matters are raised with the commission, you know, they can actually be effected if there is general consensus that we need to go that route. But like I was saying, that, you know, we need more to emphasize on our domestic, what is contained within our domestic policy, because that is what is going to be implemented in the country. And we will ensure that even in our national youth policy, those are clearly outlined. I'm not sure if colleagues from the National Youth Commission maybe would want to provide some clarity on certain issues.
Sorry, the mic here. Honourable Labenia and Honourable Moloto, these questions, yes. So, Honourable Labenia, if you can go first. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Greetings to everyone. On page 7, on the presentation that was made by the Presidency, I have a concern there where you made mention that implementation, like under implementation, there is not going to be a dedicated budget for the implementation of this charter, but rather it is going to be implemented by various departments. And I just have a concern because in the past we have not succeeded as a country in that approach. What is it that the President is going to do to ensure that these issues are prioritized? Because clearly the intentions of the charter are very good, but what is it that is going to be done to ensure that they are prioritized? Because, you know, the weakness in this approach is the fact that these departments have got their primary mandates and they really don't have to prioritize youth issues. So what is it is going to be done? And then on page 8, you made mention that this will be undertaken by national, provincial and local spheres. And one was just thinking that recently we were dealing with the legislation of the formation of the National Youth Development Agency, and there is no mention of provinces and local spheres in that legislation. So is that not contradiction, or what is going to be done in trying to address that? Because I want to believe that the two issues that we are talking about, the youth charter as well as the youth agency, are both in the President's. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Greetings to everybody in the new year. My point is that following on Honorable Levine's input, I would like to say that for any policy to be implemented effectively, certain guidelines, certain procedural positions must be in place, such that interpretations, such that structures, such that responsibilities can be accorded to certain people who would be then held responsible for delivery or non-delivery of these said tasks. Having said that, I would like to take this opportunity again to go to this clause. I think it was 15.4D. I think it's a very important clause that we shouldn't take very lightly, because if you look at the Bantu education system, where we've been taught hygiene, where we've been taught religious education at all different levels, and which was not made relevant to the world of work, the world of education, the world of classroom was just so far away from the world of work that we were being progressively educated for unemployment. And I think our investment in terms of education should be such that the world of work and the world of education should be more in line with each other, so that we can reap the maximum benefit out of the investment on education. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Before I'm giving over to the presenters to respond, how do you think the Presidency is going to popularize popularize this document after it has been deposited and it has been registered? So how are we going to popularize this document so the ordinary people can get access to this document? Before you're going to translate this document into different languages, how are you going to make this popular? Honorable Bengu, welcome to you. And hope that you have a good new year. Anything you would like to ask?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to all. But my question is that how are you going to make sure that the youth in rural areas are going to benefit on this thing, on this youth charter? Because we have seen that there is a problem of infrastructure in rural areas. As we have been mentioning here, that there is communication, there are communication implications like on the launching of the charter nationally, including the translation of charter into local languages, because we have seen that most of the people in the rural areas are illiterate. So how are you going to make sure that the youth in and young people in rural areas will understand the youth charter? Thank you.
Thank you. In terms of, you know, the question that has been raised regarding the budget of the charter, what we are saying is that it will, you know, the budget will be integrated within the budget of different departments. And I actually agree that, you know, it is a challenge. It's not a challenge in respect of this specific mandate of the charter only, but it is a challenge in respect of youth development, you know, generally, that you find different government departments not prioritizing youth development because they've got their core business, you know, that they also have to prioritize. Hence, as presidency, one of the issues that we'll be doing, we said that upon adoption of the National Youth Policy, we also need to begin a process of developing the National Youth Development Act, and that is also contained in our current proposal of the Program of Action, because we are saying that, you know, for issues of youth development to be given more priority, we need to ensure that they are legislated so that different government departments can actually prioritize them. So those are some of the plans that we have with regard to youth development. And it will also be applicable and maybe take care of the issues of the budget, et cetera. And on implementation of the charter at different levels, yes, we are saying that it has to be at local, provincial, and at national level. And, you know, in terms of the agency, whereas processes are going to be starting at national level, it is envisaged that, you know, in future we are also going to ensure that, you know, there are also similar processes undertaken at provincial level. And we are not only using going to be using the agency as the only structure. We've got, we are going to be using different government departments, of which we have, we currently have youth focal points at different levels, local, national, and provincial. So we'll be using such structures, and we'll also be using your non-government organizations to ensure that the charter is actually implemented. So we are going to be using different structures in addition to the agency which is going to be in place. And on ensuring common interpretation of the charter, yes, I think I actually agree that, you know, there is a need to customize, you know, the charter if you know, that has been identified. I think, you know, upon after the charter has been ratified, we can actually customize it you know, so that we ensure that we all have common interpretation of what is provided. So we will greatly actually include that in our communication implication. And then on how presidency is going to popularize the charter, actually this mandate currently rests with the National Youth Commission. It is going to be the responsibility of the National Youth Commission to popularize, you know, the charter. And I'm sure they will also indicate how they are going to ensure that youth in rural areas also benefit from this.
Honourable members, before I'm going to ask for comments from the NYC, is there any other question that you would like to ask? Giving over to the NYC, the chairperson, if you have any concerns or comments that you would like to make towards the council, are you happy with it? Do you have some questions, comments? From South Africa and also the young people in the continent.
So we then have a process that maybe we need to utilize that particular program to place the African standard so that a conversation ensues amongst the MCD. So these are some of the initiatives that are in place to try and ensure that the African standard gets to be popularized. And I think we also have a program which is a youth expression, where as a national youth commission, where in my head with another youth organization, to go and speak to young people about the African youth culture, and we must like television program. And then I think on the implementation, I think the youth has given all the answers, but I think as a youth commission, one of the things that would really want to see as part of building the machinery to support the implementation process is really along the issue of the international inclusion of the campaign. Well, one of the limitations is exactly the fact that how do you ensure that all the different line function departments are able, therefore, to do the things that are in the charter itself. And one of the challenges, even at the moment, is the fact that even within foreign affairs itself and the department, you do not have a new focal point where all these matters, especially with African charter and other issues that relate to is an interface, so it's directing in the different branches of the foreign affairs, and we have been trying to improve that kind of discussion with the foreign affairs so that it is making that a coherent way of looking at what is needed. Moving forward, I think the other issue that I just also wanted to mention here in the meeting and also maybe to ask the committee itself is that I understand that I think that last year in November, we got the information that the African Youth Charter is with the NCOP. I think the chief of the NCOP is with me, and he will commit when we met with them that when Parliament resumes this year, they will, I think, discuss the charter in the NCOP. And I'm just wanting to raise this here in the House, just to make sure that maybe the committee needs to follow up so that those two processes get to alive. Because I think we were there the time that the NCOP was looking or was discussing with the NYTS, so we got to be able to interface with the people to ask them to indicate that this is with them. And I think the last issue, I think, for me is just a concern. I think moving forward, all the other matters, I think we believe that the African Youth Charter, vis-à-vis South African local policy and supporting development, there is a strong alignment because South Africa already in most of the things that are entailed in the charter and moved, I think, more than 10 steps ahead in applying and putting together those things that have been raised in the charter. But I think it will be, in light of the fact that South Africa has been one of the countries that are leading in terms of the peace and security in terms of African development and the like, would really want to see South Africa ratifying the African Charter. But I think it is the view of the National Commission that we cannot delay this particular process anymore, taking into cognizance all the other challenges and the inputs that have been made by the state law advisors and others. But we think it is in the best interest of youth development in South Africa, but also in the continent, as a country to be able to showcase leadership in that regard, that the African Youth Charter, South Africa does ratify the African Youth Charter as a country. And hopefully in the National Development Agency, we know that this particular matter, somehow there would be also the responsibility of the agency to ensure that it still the part of its coordination function to ensure that it mobilizes the different stakeholders for the implementation and the support of the action.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, do you have any questions to in relation to what's just been presented to us? Nothing. Or everyone satisfied? Okay. Thank you to the Chairperson of the NYC, and then thank you to the Presidency and the Department of Foreign Affairs for your presentations. Honourable members, we do have somewhere on our program and the next two Fridays where we will consider what's been said about this charter. So I hope that then that we've then rectified this document but highlighting our concerns that came out of the discussions that took place today. And then I will leave it at that and then leave members to study this document. If you have any questions, then we will ask then the Department of Foreign Affairs and then the Presidency as well as the NYC to answer this. On our program, we have hope we can have this on the 4th of February. The consideration and the adoption of the charter that's already been scheduled, so that we can then proceed with the adoption of this charter. For now, I want to thank the department and the presidency for their inputs to the two presidents, to the two presenters. Thank you so much for your contribution and your presentation. We're going to have a 5-minute break, and then I'm going to give over to the NYC for their annual report. And then you will move to this site, and it's then for us easier to look and to face you while you're doing your presentation. Thank you. Fresh tea is on its way. And we also have lunch at 1 o'clock at the Old Assembly. So you're welcome to join us for lunch in the Old Assembly at 1. Thank you.
Thank you. some. There are recorders here. No, just have an opportunity. Can we maybe put them on the other speaker?
Yeah.
This is the recorder. I think it's, I don't know whether they are for parliamentary.
Yeah, that's right.
And this one? I'm just afraid that we can mess up with our people. And maybe we can.
Hey, I hope I can make it.
One document on my laptop. Is that one directed? To move that one directed? I thought the one was for the deputy minister. No, just see to whom it's addressed. If it's addressed,
yeah.
I think that's the one that must go to the deputy minister. The on top of the laptop, you have And the other two must also go to the element. Because both of them have to do with constituency. They're the two on top of the envelope.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
for walking off the bus. Honourable members, can we get started? We have the NYC with us, our second briefing. We thank the Commission for being present. They will present the annual report 2007/9. Yeah. So we'll hand over the chairperson just to introduce the team and then to proceed with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. Good morning once again. With me in the team, is the other three commissioners. Our deputy chair is on leave. She just gave birth to her second born baby boy named Freedom. I'm definitely he will be chanting Freedom in his lifetime also. With me on my left is Commissioner Muthupi Modiba, Commissioner Rico van Rooyen, also will be assisting as a person who was also an acting CEO in the better part of this annual report that you are presenting. Commissioner Oluthus Puka. On my far left, we've got Brutus Malada, whom, based on the fact that we just, our CEO resigned in December, so we have given him the responsibility to act as a CEO. He was a manager in my office previously, also dealing with National Youth Service Program, so he's an acting CEO at the moment. On my far right is Abongile Vanda, our parliamentary officer, which is, who is familiar to most of you members. Without further ado, we'll get to our annual report and thank the opportunity to present this annual report 2007-2008. The presentation will focus on about six areas: the context, the policy aspect of our mandate, the programs, the coordination mechanisms, the social mobilization, and the financial statements. Which will also take you through. So, in presenting this annual report, myself and the colleagues will be assisting each other, both in terms of the presentation and also questions from members. Maybe just to start, I think we just reaffirm that youth development in South Africa continues to be a priority, and it is a priority based, I think, not just on statements that young people are the future of society, but it is based on even empirical data that demonstrates that Africa as a continent, and including South Africa, is continuing to experience what is termed youth bulge. In terms of demographics, where you are experiencing youthful population, it's even estimated that this is going to be continuing in the continent until 2050 against the backdrop of aging societies in Europe. And depending on how a country, you know, plans or look at this particular demographic bonus, there is positive demand for economic growth, because once you have a youthful population, you've got an opportunity of a very large cohort of people that can be economically active, depending how you structure your economy to be able, and your education system to invest in this population. So I think that is the basis that we are saying, we reaffirm that youth development continues and should continue to be a priority in South Africa with even a, more of an emphasis. And I think that is what also our government over time has been able to demonstrate. But also I think one of the issues that we are raising is the fact that there has been visible improvement also in the youth interest to participate in government processes affecting them. And I think we are saying that because in our work of the Youth Commission, in engaging with young people, in also engaging with youth organizations themselves, the interest to participate in society is quite high. And obviously there are challenges in terms of the interface and, you know, how do you bridge that kind of participation and that image. But it doesn't take away the fact that young people are interested to participate in societal issues. And I think also one of the challenges, I think, given this analysis that we are making, is that there is persisting youth unemployment. In South Africa, I think there are statistics that almost 5,600,000, according to StatsSA report of 2005, with 51% of these being between the ages of 15 and 25 years of age. And already that is an indication to you that it is a problem. And I think also the recent labor survey also quite again affirms the fact that in South Africa we are experiencing a very serious increase of youth unemployment. And it is a danger to any society to have such, where to have these people, a majority of your population, and they are not economically active. That is, they are not contributing, you know, to the building of the economy of the country. And I think that is just a glaring challenge for South Africa. And also the challenge, I think, also that we have picked up is the scale and impact of current interventions. That yes, we continue as the different spheres of government to have numerous and innumerable interventions to try and mitigate against these challenges. But the main problem that we are finding, based on the numbers that we are talking about there, in terms of the percentage of young people that are not economically active, is the scale. That at most our programs are drips and drabs. You know, our programs are much more boutique. They are for maybe the numbers that you find are very low to be able to make any impact. And that becomes the biggest challenge, that even in the program that we have, you'll find that the program for about 200 or 500 or maximum 1,000, and you've got millions of young people that are supposed to be entering, you know, the mainstream program, so that you can be able, therefore, to see a change. Now, if you've got only few young people that are in the program, you are therefore not realizing any bigger impact in terms of your interventions. And that remains our challenge in South Africa, with all the political will, and also the good intention of developing our youth. And again, another challenge, of course, is the fragmented approach to the implementation of youth development in South Africa. And I think that permeates in the number of discussions that, and also the presentations and issues that both the committee has raised with us, and also we've raised in the meetings about the issues of fragmentation of the intervention, especially in as far as implementation is concerned. Now, going forward beyond that particular context, going forward, I think stemming from the mandate and why the Youth Commission is there, partly to coordinate and develop an integrated national youth policy as is stipulated in the Act. I think the biggest chunk of the work of the Youth Commission in realizing this specific area of the mandate is that during the financial year that we are reporting on, we're doing the reviewing of the National Youth Development Policy Framework, which was endorsed by Cabinet in 2006 that we must undertake. Now, in April 2007, we developed a base document, which was a document that we're moving from in terms of outlining the challenges. So that's more of the research information that looked at what has been happening in South Africa in trying to realize the provisions of the National Youth Development Policy Framework. So that base document was developed in April 2007 as an assessment of the challenges and outlining the alternatives for consideration as we're preparing to do the draft. Now, in May 2007, we started the actual drafting of the second generation policy. Now, between May and December 2008, we then were involved in consultations to various stakeholders in South Africa, especially youth formation. We established reference groups where we had youth organizations, especially the National Youth Formation, that we know have got structures also in provinces. We also, through our provincial youth commission, also were able to do consultations in that regard. We also engage, you know, the academia research houses that are focusing on youth development matters, so that we can be able to get also input. On the 7th of March 2008, we then submitted to the minister in the president a draft national youth policy, which we termed National Youth Policy 2008 to 2013, as a draft that must be considered by the cabinet for adoption. The current status of that policy is that in December last year, late last year in 2008, cabinet noted the draft and also called for that draft policy to be sent out for public comment, so that we can solicit views and any issues that maybe some different stakeholders might want to still include in the policy before it can actually be adopted. So the inputs, the draft policy is out, and the inputs are expected, and the deadline is the 30th of January 2009. Also, based on our challenges at the financial level as a commission, we haven't been able to sort of do a very broad, massive marketing of the process. Instead, we have used the government gazette, and also the website of government to ensure that the draft youth policy is placed there. But we have also, I think, in the advert that was done through the presidency, ensured that in all the 9 provinces, the contact details of our provincial youth commissions, including ours, is put there, so that all young people who want to get the copy can be able to get the copy of the draft policy. Moving forward, that we will be then awaiting that once that process is concluded, we look at the input, we send the final draft to cabinet for it to be adopted. But also say to mention that there is we started parallel to that a draft implementation plan process, where we, at the moment, we've only engaged with the members of the Interdepartmental Committee on Youth Affairs, which is the government department. Because one of the weaknesses of the initial policy was the fact that there was the draft national policy, the national development policy framework, but there was never an implementation plan, nor an MNE tool, which I think was one of the weaknesses of being able to measure the work that has been done, or even properly see to it that things have to be implemented. So that's one of the things that we picked up in this policy and say it is important that an implementation plan, once the policy is adopted, gets also to be quite good. On the second aspect, and also the mandate of the Commission, we therefore expect it to develop principles and guidelines and make recommendations to government regarding such principles and guidelines for the implementation of the national youth policy. How we have realized this mandate on this financial year that we are reporting on is that obviously to do that and to provide recommendations to government, we need evidence-based information. So we then engage in research. Amongst others, the things that we did in this financial year was the audit of youth directorates. Because the Youth Commission, over time, we have been lobbying and advocating for the youth focal points in the different departments, so that you can be able to have some point which coordinates the work in the line department to ensure that youth development gets to be integrated into the plans of the department and the implementation thereof. Now, the cabinet in 2006 made a pronouncement to say they accept and they endorse the implementation or government department establishing youth directorates. Now, as part of our work, we then went and did an audit of these youth directorates. And out of that particular audit, what came through is that the implementation of this decision of the executive is very slow, with only 6 departments having recorded and established the youth directorates. Different reasons are given by different departments of why they do not have some fighting challenges of finances, that they do not have enough money as a department to be able to to have the youth directorate and resource the youth directorate. But also, I think one of the also troubling observations or even sort of things that we picked up is that we had some departments where you find the senior managers of the department just indicating to you that as far as they are concerned, they are not convinced that they need to have youth directorate. And I mean, for us, in the engagement with them, I think one of the things that we made it very clear that it cannot be a discussion whether a department is convinced or not convinced because a decision has been taken in cabinet. Then there's something wrong if now when that decision needs to be implemented, then you are finding a senior official or a DG saying he or she is not convinced. And I think these are issues that we went back to the social cluster to present this particular report to the DGs to say this is what we are picking up, this is the problem. So that then the social cluster is able to then go back to the department that hasn't established the youth directory and be able to see what is it that must be done in that regard. The second aspect is the institutional mechanism study. Based on the fact that obviously when you review any policy, the mechanism to sort of implement that particular policy or institutional mechanism that support that youth policy also cannot remain the same. So as part of the debates and the discussion that has been there in South Africa about the current institutional mechanisms, both the National Youth Commission, UMSOBO Youth Fund, and the South African Youth Council as a civil society formation, these were formations that we put there to ensure that they support the youth development landscape in South Africa over and above, you know, the other stakeholders. Now, as the Youth Commission, we felt that maybe it is important just to do a benchmarking exercise to look at institutional mechanisms, both in South Africa, but also in the continent and also internationally, so that we can inform on the best institutional model to take forward values and ideals as captured in the draft national youth policy. What we're taking cognizance of the fact that there has been discussions, for example, in the youth sector itself about, you know, the weaknesses of the existing institutions and the possible alternatives, that of the merger of the National Youth Commission and some of youth funds to be an agency, that of, we're even, I think, indicating in our annual report that in the financial year that we are reporting on, the IFP Youth Brigade merged to the minister, calling for the youth minister. So in as far as trying to engage in these discussions, what we said is the youth commission is important, that we do research so that we can see whether these models to support youth development, what are the advantages and disadvantages thereof. And I think our study quite captures that as part of strengthening and enhancing the debate on institutional mechanisms so that in whatever that we take up as a country, we are able, therefore, to ensure that we don't repeat the mistakes, but also we advance in terms of ensuring that we zoom into the problem of young people, because institutions on their own cannot only solve the problem, but if we start you know, on a negative in as far as those institutions are concerned, we're always going to be having problems, which are some of the things that we've experienced over time. And then thirdly, we also had a study on private sector CSI, corporate social investment, opportunities for youth development. Also, this has been one of the areas of the Youth Commission in terms of mobilizing the different stakeholders, including private sector, to invest or also be a partner in the realization of youth development. Now, in doing that over time, we managed to sort of have this youth development forum, which I think we reported in the previous financial year. But in terms of the actual work of that particular forum, what we then did was to sort of fund a study that looked at the CSI of private companies so that we could be able to see to what extent is the money that is spent by the private sector when they are arguing that they do invest in youth development. To what extent is that money really assisting us to realize the national priorities? And that particular study, amongst others, indicated indeed that there is money that the private sector is pumping into youth development, whether into the kind of projects that they would establish for donating into schools or donating into, you know, sports clubs of young people. But in the bigger scale, it is not in any way assisting us to deal with the bigger issues that we are confronting as a country. And I think it needed to be important, therefore, that based on that study, we are able, therefore, to direct the CSI investment, obviously with the consensus of the private sector, to say how can we together utilize this investment into supporting the national priorities. And out of that, already the two committees were then established to look at the responses out of that report and the recommendations. on legislation and on monitoring, as a commission, we made submissions to the following legislative and policy processes: the Children's Amendment Bill of 2006, the Prevention of and Treatment of Substance Abuse Bill, which Commissioner Rico is the person responsible for the JCPS cluster, also even made a presentation here in Parliament. Social Services Amendment Bill, the DPLG review of systems of provincial and local government. Especially at this particular point, we wanted to ensure that part of the gap that is there in terms of the DPLG legislative framework, which at this point, at that point, was not speaking to youth development priorities, get to be integrated. And also on the CDW, the Community Development Workers Framework, with the intention to say when CDWs are taking up their work, which is very important in the communities, they need to be aware of youth development issues, youth development policy framework, so that also as part and parcel of their work, they are able, therefore, to sort of garner and mobilize communities around the support of youth development and assist local youth formations or youth clubs when they are advancing their cause at local level. Youth Parliament, of course, in 2007, we participated in the task team dealing with the logistics and conceptualization of the documents for the proceedings. I think the concern that we raised in the committee about the non-implementation of Youth Parliament resolutions and the late planning for the proceedings, I think, remained a serious challenge. And youth formation directly have, I think, communicated to us, because both those particular processes, which have also even informed or returned to the Speaker's office, where young people who are participating in the Youth Parliament were continuously calling the Youth Commission, requesting the report of the Youth Parliament, and they couldn't get the report for some time. And this continues to be a big challenge, because then young people then lose confidence in the Youth Parliament, which is a very important platform, and the young people themselves get to be very excited to be part of the Youth Parliament, because they view the Parliament as a place where they are going to be able to indicate the challenges and Parliament will do something. And I think it's an area that we have communicated to the committee, and also we have communicated to the Speaker. Continuing with the program, we know the National Youth Service is one of the biggest programs that also the Youth Commission will participate in, notwithstanding the fact that it is a fully-fledged institution, that is the National Youth Service unit that is taking care of the implementation of the National Youth Service program, and would be able to report, I think, to Mr. Bumbu much better in detail in terms of the implementation. Our work is to sort of do an oversight and ensure that we also mobilize and advocate through government departments to support the National Youth Service. But during the year in question, we adopted the communication strategy, because as a Youth Commission, amongst others, our responsibility is to ensure that this program gets to be communicated to young people, but also to the different stakeholders. So we are part and parcel of developing a communication strategy, which gets to be adopted on how we, together, different stakeholders, will communicate the program. Again, there was the Lab Desk outreach program, which was done in the Sekukune municipality in Limpopo. This was in the main informed of the fact that in that particular area of municipality specifically, you still a challenge of infrastructure in the school, where children are still studying under the trees and not having desks. So the lab desk was part and parcel of trying to contribute to that, but also because those lab desks, they had, for example, the national flag, national symbols. It was also a way of utilizing those lab desks so that as young people and children are utilizing them, they are able to learn and study and understand the national symbols of South Africa. Also, as part of the MNE program, the National Youth Commission undertook provincial visits for extensive interaction with participants and implementers, which is the work that we did also through the people that are in our own staff in the Youth Commission, to sort of ensure that people have got a clear understanding of what the National Youth Service program is and what it is not. Because at most we picked up that when you talk about the National Youth Service, there continues to be this conceptual confusion where people take National Youth Service as if it is another internship program. So we then felt that we need to do provincial visits so that we're able to explain, both in terms of the government departments in the provinces, so that they understand the people that are supposed to give support to this program, but also to young people and NGOs that are supposed to assist in the implementation of the National Youth Service. also the extensive mobilization campaign program. We launched what we termed NYS volunteer campaign, where also with the partnership with the Department of Environment and Tourism in the year in question, we were able to go to the coastal provinces, especially during December. It was a December-January program where we're trying to ensure that during the time that young people are on holidays, we utilize that time so that they spend it in service. So they were brought into the program where they were cleaning the beaches. That's why the coastal provinces, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, KZN, yeah. So that was the program that we did in partnership. And through that program, we registered almost more than 10,000. The number is 11,286 young people. But because the intention of the program was to be able to engage young people, to tell them about the National Youth Service, and then to say to them, those who want to participate must register. And then our responsibility is to take that database, hand it over to the National Youth Service Unit as a unit that is responsible for implementation, so that when these service activities get to be secured through the government department, you do have the database of young people who are prepared to participate in the service program. So it's one of the programs that was quite successful and also created a lot of excitement. And we know the Health Commission, even beyond that, especially those provinces, they continued to request that the Youth Commission must come back with this particular program. And of course, the challenge will always be resources. Young Women's Program. As part of also our strategic plan, the Youth Commission identified young women, and even I think in the National Youth Development Policy Framework, young women are also identified as a target group that needs to be attended to because of their special needs as a group. Now, we, as the Youth Commission, looked at ways and means of providing support to young women's organizations to enhance the cooperation and uniformity of approach. And also how to encourage young women to become agents of their own change and future. And now, as part of that particular program, we then picked up through the work that we do and also through our coordination that there are initiatives in provinces of youth formation, of networks that have been established by young women on their own. And therefore, what we did at the national level, we thought that it is important that we create a national platform where we bring all these things together, all these initiatives together, so that people can be able to share experiences, and also they could be able to access, you know, these national programs that government has. Now, on the 29th to the 31st of August, we had an inaugural conference of that particular concept, because we developed a concept that we said we would want to see a national young women's network. Now, that conference took place, and one of the highlights of the discussion, you remember that there was a discussion at the time about the guidelines of the Department of Education around learner pregnancy. It was a platform also where we engaged the Minister of Education by young women about specifically those policy guidelines that they were implementing. But out of that inaugural conference, young women agreed and adopted the notion of a network that they saw is important, because then it created a platform for them as young women in KZN, as young women in the Western Cape, where they can be able to share experiences, and also they could be able to learn the best things that they've done in the different areas, and also as a collective be able to mobilize and realize their own challenges. This led to the formation of a steering committee for establishment of a national young women's network. Now, the network is in the process of being established. There are structures, for example, already Free State as a province has got a Free State Young Women's Network, which is located in the Free State Youth Commission, and it's working very well with the different government departments in the Free State province. In other provinces, you didn't have a formidable structure, which is this particular steering committee now, which is made up of young women from the different provinces, is trying to ensure that you've got some that kind of a network in the other provinces, learning from the model of the state. The NYC is supporting the program until it is able to become self-sufficient and is registered as an entity, which young women have felt that they would need not to be a government entity, to be a civil society structure that gets to interface with government. And already we have managed to facilitate engagement with departments like the Department of Public Affairs and others who already have indicated their support, like the GEMBAM of the Department of Education, where they've got a girls' education movement that they said that they would want to partner with this particular initiative to ensure that they're able to realize their different programs. on cluster work, how we've sort of structured our work as a commission, especially for commissioners, was to say that we want to align ourselves to the government clusters so that we can be able to give a direct input into the clusters of government. Now, the different commissioners sit in the clusters of government. On the social cluster, the things that we did, for example, that the program of action for youth development largely is located in the social cluster as priority number 7. And out of that, the youth commission, you will see if you look at the government POA, there are specific priorities that will be put in the social cluster, and the National Youth Commission and also the youth fund will be given those specific responsibilities with the responsible line function department as a way of ensuring that they implement and give report back to the social cluster in terms of progress in the different priorities. The National Youth Policy has been one of the priorities in the social cluster itself. The issue of the National Youth Service Program is another priority that is already there as part of the social cluster work. Maintaining of youth development through establishment of youth directories in all the 3 spheres of government. Also, this is a cluster responsibility, as I was reporting about that particular research. When we did it, we went back to the social cluster to present it back so that then they are able to report to cabinet in terms of the progress in that regard. Moving forward, in terms of the economic cluster, the youth development forum that I've already spoken about, I'm not going to repeat the CSI study that we did in that work. Youth Information Society and Development Program. This is a partnership that we engage with the PNC, the Presidential National Commission on Information Society and Development, which is an agency of the Department of Communications. So there is a program which was launched with ourselves and the particular department that ensures that young people get to participate in ICTs. Cross-border tourism youth empowerment program. This is a program that has been handled by the National Youth Commission, which starts to create an exchange program between young people in South Africa and in the region. So you have specific provinces. I think it's KZN, it's Limpopo, it's Gauteng, it's the Western Cape that are participating in the cross-border program. Then, depending when the edition is going to be, for example, the last one was in Namibia, then you have young people from those provinces that are already in the tourism business or are studying tourism-related courses, then they would then go and participate in that exchange program, and they would meet young people from the different SADC countries and exchange information about how to participate in the tourism, what are the other tourism opportunities in their own countries, and also be able, therefore, you know, to start a sort of a partnership or relationship in that regard. So this was the work that we were doing as part of the economic cluster. But I also think to mention that ourselves as a commission, because also in this specific area, Umsobo Youth Fund as an institution is one that is the main implementer of the program to economically empower young people. We had engaged in a memorandum of understanding with the Umsobo Youth Fund as part of sort of locking our relationship with them, so that the issue of duplication that has always been raised is something that is sort of reduced. So out of that, there have been some initiatives where, for example, on the National Youth Service Program, which is located at Umsobo Youth Fund, we've been able now to clarify our relationship so that we don't do the same things as the National Youth Commission, but together as Umsobo Youth Fund and the National Youth Commission, we're able to go out there and ensure that we realize the kind of service activities and the resources, but then Umsobo Youth Fund, through the National Youth Service Unit, is able to implement. On international relations, there was the EU Youth Summit that preceded the main summit of the heads of states of the EU and the European Union. So in South Africa, we participated in the regional consultation, which was led by the AISA.
the African Institute of South Africa that was responsible to garner information and input from young people in the region about the issues that need to be raised in the AU-EU summit. So that was one of the areas of the things that we did. And secondly, I think the Africa Youth Charter, which has been spoken about, and the work that we did during the financial year to ensure that this particular charter gets to be taken to cabinet and it comes to parliament. That was the main preoccupation in that regard. The establishment of the SADC steering committee, we are continuing with that particular work of advocating for the establishment of the SADC youth union. And what we are doing in that regard, ourselves as a commission being the convener of the particular steering committee, where we have national youth councils, they're not called commissions in the other countries, they are councils where we meet and discuss youth development, and amongst others, in terms of the steering committee, one of the things that they've been doing is trying to put together a study that must be able to look at what is the status of youth development in the region, so that we can therefore advocate for a protocol on youth development. Because our observation and what is the issue that we are raising is that in the region there isn't a comprehensive protocol that mobilizes all the countries around a common youth development agenda, and that remains a challenge. Because if you look at issues of youth development in the region, they are only raised through issues of HIV and AIDS, and we're saying there are broader issues that are affecting young people in the region, and we need collectively to be able to have some kind of protocol that the countries must be able to realize. Also, stemming from the African Youth Charter, because also we are also informed of the African Youth Charter as that guiding framework. And also we hope that, I think, the Africa Youth Day, which is celebrated in the continent, but I think the main thing that we did during the Africa Youth Day was part of popularizing the Africa Youth Charter, because what we did, we convened a session with the different youth formations, NGOs and everyone, and then we started debating the Africa Youth Charter and the provisions, and then youth organizations therefore made input on how we can then realize some of those issues. They then give us some of the ideas, which I think I've spoken to earlier on about the popularization, and how also these youth organizations will be able themselves, through their own constituencies, take the issue of popularizing the African Charter forward. In the JCPS, that's the Crime Prevention and Security Cluster, the Central Drug Authority, at the moment, our Commissioner Enrico is chairing, sitting at the board, chairing the Youth Intervention Committee, which I think is one of the achievements in that regard, because now we're able to influence the direction and ensure that youth development aspects within the Central Drug Authority, are realized. And I think it has also ensured that in the provincial structures of the CDA, there has even been a call to ensure that provincial youth commissions, but also government departments, get to ensure that youth issues are even realized at that level, and even go to even a local level, because what also is entailed there is that you need to have local drug action committees, which through also our local government program, we've been able to ensure that we advocate that young people must participate in the local drug action committees, so that once these committees are established in the different communities, young people also are represented in the communities to be able to fight the scourge of drugs and substance abuse. The Kimoja is one of the programmatic expression of that strategy. And the NYC is the leading player in the development of the Kimoja strategy and refocusing the campaign. Because when we came in, what we did was to look at the Kimoja program, the first phase, and then for say that maybe there is a need to refocus, because Kimoja was more about a campaign to raise awareness. But we're saying beyond raising awareness unto young people about the problems of drug abuse, then what? How do you ensure that you integrate young people and those that have been affected by drugs into other social activities? So we're able, therefore, to contribute into the conceptualization of the refocusing of the campaign itself. But we also formed, as part of the whole notion of the moral regeneration program, we formed a National Youth Religious Forum to inform the CTA activities. What we did was to ensure that we bring together the different youth formations, whether in the Catholics, the Muslim communities, the Jewish and the Christian community so that they speak together, including the Rastafarians, indeed, so that they also make an input in the whole band of moral regeneration. So we felt that it is important. Also, they can participate in the CDA activities because most of young people are found really in churches, and you cannot dismiss that reality, and you need these youth formations also to participate in those kind of programs. And I must mention that they've responded quite very, very well. Governance and administration. Local governments, we established a local governance reference committee that advises the National Youth Commission on best practice models for integration of youth development at local level. This is formed by youth development practitioners at local government, some of them who are officials, some of them that are coming from youth organizations, our provincial youth commission, the Department of Local Government also sits in the reference committee. Because we then utilize that particular platform, you know, as a basis of engaging and finding answers, also understanding what are the challenges that DPLG is able also to indicate to us, what exactly are the issues, how are they taking up the matters that we have been raising with them over time. So that is the work of the reference committee, which sort of sits almost quarterly. Then we've got other, also this cluster work, the Flemish cooperation. The cooperation that we have held over time with the Flemish government shifted from the CAR model. CAR model is representing capacity building, advocacy, and research to supporting community art centers, because the Flemish government decided that they thought that they've done much in terms of assisting us in the work of developing local youth policy and building the capacity in that regard, and they would want to get involved in a tangible project. Now, out of that, four art centers were then identified where the program would provide support. It's in KZN, the Best Center, the Western Cape and Nyanga Arts Development Center, in Free State, Mabane Center, and in Gauteng, Ipilegeng Youth Center. And those youth centers get to be supported through the Flemish Corporation and ourselves on how do you manage an art center, but also beyond that, how do you get the issues of young people into the policy space of government in as far as arts and culture is concerned. But also it assists in terms of ensuring that beyond the actual arts and culture programs that they have, how do we integrate that, you know, into the issues of the community? How do we include, for example, the National Youth Service program that is being done by the Youth Commission into those actual programs? So we've got those particular four provinces that are participating. And also into the program of going to Belgium in the study tour, they also participate. So they take young people, the centers will then provide us with the young people that are participating in their program to be part of the study tour to go to Belgium, where they learn now in detail and exchange with the Belgium of how do you run an art and culture center, but also how do you creatively engage young people utilizing arts and culture as an expression to support youth development. So the annual training is happening in Flanders, as I have mentioned. On coordination, as stipulated in the mandate that we are expected to coordinate and direct and monitor the implementation of such principles. Coordination, these are sort of the variety of platforms that we sort of undertake coordination. The Chairperson Forum, extensive discussions on the draft national youth policy and institutional mechanisms. Here, what we sort of did was to be able, when we meet with the Chairperson Forum, in the Chairperson Forum, is to give the draft document and discuss it amongst the Chairperson and allow provinces, therefore, to go back to their provinces and utilize the civil society formations and youth organizations to make input. But through those inputs, then those inputs get to be solidified or consolidated by the Provincial Youth Commission, and they are then sent to the National Youth Commission, so that when we make our final input as a youth commission, at least we can safely say that young people have then participated. So that is how, you know, we are able to sort of utilize the Chairperson Forum to coordinate and also try and receive these inputs. Also at an administrative level, the CEO Forum, to share the best practice on administrative matters and as a coordination point between the commission and also our administrators. I mean, it has been a very good platform, because we find that administratively, the capacity of the different commissions is not the same. There are others, like, for example, the Free State Youth Commission, which has been there for quite some time and quite very strong administratively, and find that there are commissions like the Western Cape, which is still a new commission, and Gauteng, so they are able there to share administratively how they can be able to assist each other. And even through that, you find that the different commissions are able, therefore, to travel to the other commission and stay there maybe for a week to learn, you know, how to build the administrative system of the organization as part of supporting our work as an organization. And again, the Interdepartmental Committee on Youth Affairs. I think this is the platform that we have been utilizing over time as the Youth Commission, you know, to be able to monitor and sort of do our own oversight over government departments. Here we've got members of the youth directories in the different departments. Now, where there are no youth directories, you find that you've got a challenge, because then the department would either send a secretary of a, whether a deputy director or someone that would be available at that particular point in time, and creates a lot of challenge in terms of that particular department having been able to sort of consolidate its own input into the Interdepartmental Committee on Youth Affairs, and any input now to go back to the specific department. So that is a platform that we have been utilizing to interface with the various government departments. Youth Development Forum, I've spoken about it, the private sector space, notwithstanding the fact that we've got the different engagements or stakeholder forums that we are holding through our clusters and through the other different activities to meet with the civil society stakeholders. 2007 and 8, on social mobilization, in 2007-2008, the NYC ran program for engagement with young people to raise their awareness on issues affecting them and for them to inform the NYC policy processes. We did, in partnership, an ID Yourself campaign. This was a partnership between ourselves, IEC, the Department of Home Affairs, and the SAPC. The intention was really to focus especially on the grade 10, grade 11, and the grade 12. In schools, those that are at the age of having IDs. So we took this particular program as part of ensuring that these young people have got the ID. So we go to the different communities, to the different schools, and be able to ensure that the Department of Home Affairs provides its mobiles and its infrastructure to ensure that young people get to register. And also they are made aware of, if you want to have an ID, what is it that you need to have, and all this information that they would need in order for them to register for an ID. But also beyond that, it was also a platform utilized to also explain to young people what are the benefits of having an ID beyond elections. You know, what are the government services that government has. So we'd be also bringing other government departments and some of the programs that we have held. On the Youth Month, which is the biggest also program that we always have, because we are responsible as a commission also with other stakeholders for the Youth Month, we launched our youth festival. We had this concept of the youth festival over time, bringing together all the different inputs. The youth festival, which is a three-day program, where the first day is focusing on sports, you know, in line with the 2010, we wanted to sort of mobilize nationally, you know, young people behind the 2010, but also promoting sports. So we then sort of established a June 16 trophy, where you have local sports clubs or soccer clubs playing, and out of them, that one that win will then be handed over the trophy by the president and the chairperson of the National Commission on the actual youth day. So the sports day is the first day, and then we also partnered with Love Life, which has also continued to be our partner, where we have Love Life games, you know, different games that teach young people through sports, you know, HIV prevention, which is one partnership which was very good that continues with us in terms of the first day, that is the sporting activity. Then the second day is around youth information hubs, focusing on economic opportunities and education opportunities for young people. This is where we bring both government departments, but also the private sector, to be able to say these are the things that we do, and then we bring young people to interface directly with these institutions so that they can be able to get information about bursaries, information about job opportunities, information about different things which are opportunities for young people, and also business opportunities, tenders, and all these other things for economic participation. We also, during the year, that we are reporting, launched the PNC Youth I-17 that program with the DG of Communications. Even there, we had, I think, the mayor, because we're in the East London, we all also there committed money of the municipality around a program to improve ICT for young people in the Southern municipality. We also launched a youth social dialogue program in partnership with the Facebook Foundation in that specific year. This was a continuing program of the National Youth Commission to sort of engage young people in dialogue across political backgrounds, religious backgrounds, and the like. But we have launched it during that specific year, and we had a discussion about Steve Biko, who was a young person, and his contribution, and how young people of today can be able to celebrate him and learn from him as one of the leaders. Presidential Youth Working Group also is another platform that we also had, where different young people get to engage with the president and discuss the issues that are affecting them. So in terms of the program performance, I think these are the issues that I thought I needed to highlight. Safe to say that as the process of the merger of the institutions is sort of being wrapped up, it is important also for us, I think, at a later stage to sort of indicate some of the challenges and of the program that will need to be handed over to the youth institution so that those programs are not lost, because there are commitments that have been made, there are young people that know that are participating in programs, and those things need to be sort of handed over to the new institution in a manner that doesn't disrupt those particular programs. We'll just give over to Commissioner Rico to provide the financial aspect of the program.
Thank you, Chairperson. The NYC requested a budget from National Treasury for 2007-2008 of 30 million. As we do not, this request normally goes via the presidency, as we do not get a direct budget from National Treasury. Amongst others, the purpose was to buy new systems and employ more staff in the finance department so that there can be a separation of functions and improve controls. We received in the 2006-2007 financial year a budget of 19.2 million rand. In 2007-2008, we only received a budget of 20.5 million rand. A mere budget increase of 1.3 million, which constitutes 6.6% budget increase. Normally, our budget increases is between 6 and 8%. This one was 6.6%. While our personnel expenditure increased was 642,000 as per the annual adjustments. And that excluded the CPIX double digits increase, as government agreed with the union that increase would be based on CPIX. Noting that this means that our budget does not make allocations for programs, really. It does not take really into consideration inflation, especially when you have higher than expected increases like we saw last year with the petrol prices, transport cost went up, and it does not enable us to budget for research, although we plan for it. When we get a budget, we have to go back and readjust that budget. Also, it didn't make provision for the national youth policy, and neither for the merger processes. Hence, we requested 30 million as per the business plan we developed and submitted. The key challenges we face, the merger between the UIF and NYC, whilst we welcome the merger and the fact that we have now the new bill in place, signed by the president, it caused great uncertainty and instability for our staff. This is the inherent nature of mergers, which then result in a much higher staff turnover in our finance department, already short-staffed in finance, in our finance department due to budget constraints. We also then had a lack of appropriate skills. For example, our CFO, our state accountant, our finance manager, and our finance administrator all resigned due to these uncertainties. Young professionals, they want stability. They want to know, are they going to have a job 3 months down the line, 6 months down the line, which constitute 80% turnover in our finance department. Just last year, after we worked hard to get a CFO, our CFO resigned. 2 months later, our CEO also resigned in December. So if you add that to a lack of proper systems for knowledge management and database management, then it really puts a strain. Therefore, you will see that our finances reflect an organization in strain and under severe challenges, given the lack of skill. Just to give a summary of our budget that we got, referring to the 23.7 million rand, our personnel expenditure was, I'm going to focus on the actual expenditure, not the budgeted, was 11.2 million, was 99% expense, 99% spending. Administrative expenses were 7.6 million. Operating expenses were 4.4 million. Machinery and equipment were 303,000. And we adjusted this from the Auditor General's budget that we got back from them. You look at the deficit of 1.3 million. We had this non-cash movement, which means a lot of depreciation in IT equipment. If you look at our budget expenses, you saw that we inherited the debt of Aventura Resorts, which was 680,000. Initially, it was 2.2 million. We then entered into negotiations with Aventura Resort and said, no, we can't pay you that. We can pay for actual expenditure, in actual expenses incurred, which then amounted through negotiations to 680. Also, two major extra causes for this deficit was the audit fees. The audit fees went up to just over 2 million. The AG's office, we paid just over a million. Then we have the internal audit committee, internal audit services, PwC, and then the audit committee, which are compliance issues. And then the adjustments in terms of the IT equipment, when we inherited the contract with the IT company where NYC rented equipment, and that was another 1.5 million rand, which then caused this deficit. And just an explanation on the next slide, which deals with property, plant, and equipment, which we took straight from the AG's report after they completed, which shows the non-cash transactions, your computer equipment, computer software, furniture and fittings, and office equipment that went to just over 2 million as a result of this contract that we had, and that contract is now coming to an end. In terms of the lifespan of the contract. Also, those unforeseen increases in equipment when they have to bring in parts, when we rent computers, the computer breakdown, then they have to order parts from other parts of the world, and that causes all sorts of increases. I'm gonna skip the next slide because it really just explains the adjustments. Maybe that is important. Due to all the high turnover, we had a variance of 67,000 rand. We got permission from National Service to reallocate that money. When we saved on personnel expenditure, so we then covered the debt of or the over expenditure on other areas. For example, the operating expenses and the machinery and equipment. In both cases, we have 62,000 rand under allocation due to unexpected increases in prices, and with machinery and equipment, we then have 3,006 rand. The basis for the disclaimer of opinion, expenditure. Under expenditure, like I indicated in the presentation, due to lack of systems, knowledge, and database management, and the high staff turnover, just to give some context to this, is when our audit start, you have a situation where 80% of the finance department resigned, so now you have new people. And you ask new people where are documents, it's difficult for them to find it since we don't have a system that captures things electronically. So then it becomes difficult to find exactly where are those documents. It doesn't always mean that the documents are not there. It means that they cannot necessarily find the documents because they are new. The donor funding, due to the lack of system, the donor funding is we get the funds from the Flemish government, but we have to bridge that funds out of the budget of the National Youth Commission. So what happens is we pay out of the budget of the National Youth Commission, which we get from presidency, the local government program. And then 6 months down the line, we get the first tranche from the Flemish government. Then we transfer that money from our donor account to our actual account. So it's the first time in this financial order that Treasury said to us, no, you have to separately account for that. Previously, it was not the audit finding, which we have now put the necessary systems in place. They are now requiring, as per their regulation, that we must state whether this is a conditional grant. What we explained to them is, conditional grant for us means that if the Flemish government gives us 3 million, we have to have 3 million in excess. So if they cancel that agreement and recall the money, they want conditional grant back, we have to be in a financial position to give it back. Now, if we don't even get our budget when we develop a business case for it, where are we going to get 3 million to have in excess like a discretionary fund? We don't have a discretionary fund where we can back up that request. So we do foresee some serious challenges from receiving specific conditional grants from either other governments or other donors. So previously that was not an audit finding, and based on the previous reports, we then continued with that practice of we bridge, and once the money comes back, we transfer the money to the NYC's account. Provisions, due to lack of budget, the increase, I explained the deficit of 1.3 million. We spend over 2 million on audit fees, over 1 million on IT equipment, and as a result of the contract. We inherited debt in our previous audit report. We indicated in the 2006-2007 audit report that debt would be settled in the financial year 2007-2008. In terms of property, plant and equipment, I did explain the adjustment. When you look at the devaluation of those assets, first, because we rent, the assets cannot become ours. So if you devaluate a rental asset, which is not ours in the first place, then we won't have the assets to cover our debt, should we then have any debt. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Just one question before we add more questions. The staff, the CEO resigned at the end of 2008, am I correct? December, yeah. Other staff resignation, when did that take place? Senior staff like the CFO, when did the CFO resign?
The CFO resigned in October.
2008.
That's correct.
Thank you for your presentation, and thank you for that annual report. I will open the floor now for members to ask their questions. Members? Honourable Ma, Honourable Bindu.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, from the report, it's clear to me that there is an improvement in the work of the Youth Commission. I'm speaking under correction, Chairperson, but I think in the year prior to year to this one, as part of the program, there was lots of emphasis on education, and in this report I see almost nothing on education, which was a very big emphasis previously. I just wanted to know something on that one.
Okay, Honorable Bengu.
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation. Mine is that, as we have mentioned, that the huge number of unemployment youth in the country. So what is the commission doing on that context? Because we have seen that the departments usually came to Parliament and report that they are trying to reduce the number of unemployment youth in the country. So what is happening there? Do you have any reports from the various departments how they reduce that unemployment, and how many youth have been employed by them? Because we are having the same issue with regards to the employment of disabled people in the country. There is huge number of unemployment, although the people have skills, but they are not employed. But the department, they come here and say that, no, we employ the disabled people, they report the number of the statistics of those people. But so the commission, can you elaborate on the number of the people, youth that is employed by the various departments? Thank you.
Okay. Six departments have youth directors or youth officers from your audit, as presented to us, is very little. And I know that you said that you have problems with the department and your discussions with the department in establishing these youth directors, but six to six. So little. Can you encourage them through the clusters or through the presidency or through the department
so that more departments can have these youth directors? And what is the NYC doing to encourage them? But six are really too little. And then the question just came up here about the youth charter. If we rectify it, but then will the department recognize this youth charter and then also establish these youth directors in their department? What guarantee do we have? Because we have been struggling with the department in establishing these youth directors, but then if we rectify this youth charter, what guarantee do we have? And so that we can encourage them to establish more of these youth officers in the department. I'm still trying to figure it out, the financial part, because it's really a huge concern. Before we're going to work on the bill for the youth agency, the finances, and then if the new agency, will they then inherit this? And I'm just asking a few questions around this regarding the finances. The reason why I'm asking you, when did the staff resign? And they resigned in 2008. And this report is 2007-2008. You can't tell me they resigned in 2008, but the problem that you have with finances in 2007 is only indicated in the 2007-2008 report. And yes, you did say that the systems were not enough, things had to be recorded electronically. You said that there was a problem with skills and knowledge. But I'm very concerned when you mentioned those three factors, because you interviewed them, you hired them, the CFO, the CEO. Are you saying you interviewed and allowed them to be employed without those skills? Or are you saying that the new people that they employed, that you employed, are they lacking those skills? So that is one of my concerns. So, and we can't have a new agency and employing people without skills. And what you said about the rental, very concerned about it, because so many of our NGOs are renting equipment they can't pay to that to be fixed. And how can you say it? So we need to look into this. And then the Flemish fund. My understanding is when the organization writes a proposal for funding, then 3 million is awarded to that country or that organization. When they budgeted, they couldn't have budgeted already for that 3 million. But they couldn't have made payments toward it. And I can't accept what you said, because the 3 million was awarded to it. If everything goes wrong, you would have budgeted for that, whatever went wrong. So because all the NGOs, especially when they write proposals, they must have been backup funds for this. How can we expect that problems can come up? So I'm going to get the 3 million anyway, so I need to budget for it. So we need to know what, when you write a proposal, they will tell you this 3 million is awarded to these specific items that you have written the proposal on. So what you said, I think you just need to clarify that for us, please. Honorable Gould, do you have any questions? I forgot to look this side, if there are any hands. Okay. I'm giving over to you. We have more questions for you for a later stage. Thanks.
On the personnel issue, maybe just to go back to the relevant financial year in question, you'd remember that the chairperson in the introduction actually mentioned Commissioner Van Rooyen as someone who has acted in a CEO capacity for the better part of that financial year concerned. So really, we've been having a lot of staff retention problems. I think our turnover rate, you know, it's been quite high, always above 40%. I think, as per the figures, even what we presented in the last financial report. We had for the better part of the 2007-2008 financial year, we had a commissioner acting, and then we had a CEO come in, and just as she was stabilizing, she also left because of you know, the threat of instability as a result of the merger and so forth and so forth. As far as the CFO is concerned, she only joined, I think, some 4 or 5 months after we had the new CEO. So also there was somebody, the head of procurement was acting for a very long time. The deputy director for procurement was acting as a CFO for a very long time, because we struggled to attract the right kind of talent for various reasons, including the obvious issue that we've been dealing with, you know, since really coming into office, the possibility of the dissolution of the institution. The CFO did not last for 10 months. She again left, because of such instabilities. And I think we must also stress that we've had a change management process exercise that we embarked on. And among the key findings is that our staff in general have a very low morale because of the instabilities. It does not help when the president of the ANC, if I may indulge, says that on the media that everybody must start brushing up their CVs in the National Youth Commission because their jobs are on the line, you know. So it's the kind of environment that we've been operating under. And it's really been difficult to extract the motivation and dedication from our staff. Most of them spend, you know, the bulk of their time going through job opportunities because all of them want to leave the institution. In fact, anybody who is there can be argued is there because they've not yet found a better job or a more secure job also. So it's really been quite a serious problem that we've been contending with. And you know, Elrico has also mentioned, you know, in our finance department, we have a turnover of about 80% in this financial year. The other issue is that even from the last report, it was mentioned that we don't have sufficient capacity to effectively respond to our responsibilities in terms of checks and balances within finance and procurement. And it does not help when you ask for a budget increase that will respond to such things and get something that struggles to even meet inflationary related increases. So we have not been able to beef up or supplement the shortage that we have as per our structure, but we have also struggled to retain the very few people that we have. Thanks.
Chairperson, I will just from the financial side explain the what do I mean with the skills gap. In 2006, our first CFO resigned, and then we appointed a consulting firm to help with that process. So, and for 6 months, and then again we. Then have the CEO coming in, and she then also resigns. Then we have to have, again, interim measurements. So this is what I mean. Once a body of knowledge has been built up, it does not get transferred to a next CEO or a next finance manager or state accountant, because they now know exactly what corrective measures we have put in place. So that body of knowledge doesn't get transferred to the next team that we have to appoint. Because although they come with a set of skills and knowledge, they still have to learn to apply that to our specific environment. So that's what I mean in terms of that
coming on day one, like what the Americans expected of President Obama, and then wanting him to make decisions about Guantanamo Bay. It is a challenge. In terms of the Flemish, I'm going to try again to better explain it. The first thing is that I think that is important is that in previous financial years, this was not an audit finding. And now I want to explain how we manage that local government program. The Flemish government gave us 2.5 million for this program. But that money doesn't come when we get our budget. Our budget starts 1st of April. So our first tranche we get from presidency is somewhere around the 20th of April. Which then means but the program is already implemented, but they don't give the money when the MOU is signed. They give it 6 months down the line. So the program requires that we have local government program managers. We have administrators. We do traveling. We have to do documents and stuff like that. So now the Youth Commission has to bridge that program until the money comes. So what we do is we pay out of our account, which we have the normal government account, the expenses for the local government program. The Flemish transfer the money, and we get that money into our donor account. Then we debit that money back. We transfer that money from the donor account. If we spend 500,000 rand on salaries on the actual program, we then transfer that 500,000 rand back to our account. What the AG doesn't want is exactly that. They don't want us to transfer the money from our donor account to our main account. They want us to administer the local government program through our donor account. In other words, we have to pay the salaries out of the donor account and not through our main account. That's why they talk about wrongful entries. It was entered into two different places, and it is the same amount. So in other words, if we spend 500,000 rand for 6 months on the salaries, then it will show from the donor account that 500,000 rand went out of that account into our account. And they don't want that. They want a separate accounting system for that. That's the one issue. The second thing is this conditional grant, whether a grant is conditional or discretionary. Conditional is if you applied for a grant of 2.5 million and you said in your proposal you're going to use it for A, B, C, and D, then it's exactly what you have to use it for. You can't use it for anything other. That we have done. We have complied in terms of the reasons why they gave us the money. The only thing that we didn't do in terms of the report is the accounting system. They want a separate accounting system for that. And we didn't have a separate account. We have now set up that process. Thank you.
I think there were two questions that were not answered. The one on the youth directorate that the chairperson asked that we only have six. I think we are also in the same understanding, and I think we really would like to see this change drastically. To an extent, I think as a commission at one point we even indicated to the social cluster that if this doesn't improve, as far as we are concerned, we are going to go to a name and shame where we go publicly with this information. We are giving them an opportunity to be able to sort it out and put pressure in their government department so that at least there is an improvement. To an extent, what we then did beyond that was to even say our PRP currently is trying to even expand this audit to even include provinces, but also support the study that we did with the Flemish that looked at the local government one. Because also the local government one, at the time we only had about 38% of local youth units that have been established in the municipalities. So we then said, because that study was done in 2006, we said, as part of this process, let's also go now, as we are giving chance to the government departments at the national level to improve, let's then look at the provinces. Because there's no use of only looking at the national. Let's look at the provinces, but also let's also update our local ones. Because at most, government departments will always say, no, we're doing this, we've got this. This year, they will say, we've got this problem. So this following year, we want to see whether they are then making any provision to then establish or correct the challenges that they are having. So that is exactly what we are looking at. And I think it's a matter that would like to see that if we, the Youth Commission is being closed into the agency. It's something that is very important to be prioritized in putting pressure to government departments around this particular issue, because it's very strenuous. And I think you are correct, Chairperson, when you mentioned the issue of the guarantees around the African Charter. But one of the realities, especially in terms of issues of international relations, is that we're saying our foreign policy is very good. And now, but the challenge is that there isn't specific that relates to supporting youth development beyond the borders of the country, notwithstanding what the Youth Commission is doing at the current moment. But the fact of the matter is that if there is any, if I make an example, for example, with the MDGs, the Millennium Development Goals, when South Africa has to give an account on the MDGs, especially that relates to those provisions that are talking about youth education issues, access of girl child to education, then you are going to find that the Department of Foreign Affairs is only then that it will try and extract information maybe from the Department of Education. It will then come to the National Youth Commission asking whether the Youth Commission has got the information. And we are saying that cannot be. The Department of Foreign Affairs must have a dedicated focal point that looks at all the international protocols that therefore South Africa signs and therefore is able to monitor with the National Youth Commission as an institution, so that as and when, like what you were raising earlier on about the African Youth Charter and the issues of disability, that when these issues are coming on board, immediately that particular desk is going to be able to tell us that anyway South Africa has signed a protocol around youth issues with disability, so that this thing can be aligned. But now, because there isn't that kind of, there's a lot of fragmentation. You've got an African Youth Charter, this side which is being advocated for, that it must be ratified. You've got another protocol that also affects young people with disabilities, and another protocol, but there isn't a point where there is a coordination of this thing, especially in the Department of Foreign Affairs. And I can safely say, as a commission, in most of the time, I know that we've been trying so hard to even just to get a workshop with the Department of Foreign Affairs to say, let's just have a discussion where you understand the work that we are doing, so that you can be able, therefore, to support the work that you are doing, and we support the things that you are doing, so that you don't just call us when you need to write a report and ask us as a Youth Commission to give information. So that is one of the challenges, and I think I just wanted to agree with the Chairperson on the matter that she was raising. But it also has to do with one of the limitations, the structural limitations of the Youth Commission as a model, which is one of the things that I think has therefore raised this debate of saying maybe we need this matter of the Youth Commission into an agency, because we do not have an enforcement. The Youth Commission as an institution was just established as a body that will go there and advocate. I always make this example, it's like going and preaching like a pastor. Now, but you then do not have any mechanism to enforce people that have been preaching to you for all these years, so you must become members of my church. Now, it's exactly the same challenge in terms of the mandate of the Youth Commission, that we are there just to always encourage and ask people. Sometimes it takes very long, and we've seen this thing in the Youth Commission, that it has taken so long just for some of the things that the Youth Commission has advocated for. I mean, you can talk about the youth directories themselves. Cabinet pronounced them in 2006. It's 2009 now. We're only sitting with only six departments. It demonstrates to you that you need more mechanisms. You need something that is going to make departments to move if they are not moving, rather than always asking them. Because some of these things are national priorities, and if they are not responding with speed, we then, as the institutions or as government, you know, get to be attacked by the public and young people themselves. And I think it's one of the notions that would really feel that as a parliament also is closing into the new parliament. I think those are issues that also must be taken to ensure that enforcement is something that must be done, including with the agency, because there is not going to be any change if the agency is not going to have any recourse, you know, to government departments when they've agreed on things and are not doing them. I think that's one issue that I wanted to sort of mention. And I think on the issue of employment that the Honourable Member Bing was asking about, whether do we have a report. At this point, we do not have a report about how many young people have government departments employed. But I think it's information that you can be able to request from the through the interdepartmental committee, and we can then forward to the committee. But I think one of the things with the preoccupation of the national youth policy, two specific areas which I think are linked to also the issue of Honorable Moss is education and employment. And I think on employment, on education, one of the critical interventions that we are raising there is second chances. Because the reality in our situation in South Africa is that young people are dropping out. And majority of them are dropping out at grade 11, at the age of 16. And our education system, unfortunately, is not made up to a way where it can be able to absorb back these young people into the system. Well, for example, if you leave school at the age of 16 and you're doing grade 10, and now for whatever reason, let's say you are pregnant, then you come back after 2 years, you are 18, and you cannot be allowed by the education policy that you are already old. Now, what then happens to that particular young person? And these are the things that we are saying that you need second chances so that those that are dropping out for various reasons. Some of the reasons are very genuine, are social issues that are affecting young people. There should be some kind of diversion program that these young people will be diverted to, but with the intention of bringing them back into the formal education system. So it's one of the things that are in the policy, and we're hoping that the sooner the policy gets to be adopted by cabinet, then you have the implementation plan, well, then programmatically you can therefore be able to say, how do you develop second chances, so that it's not just a statement of intent, but there is a programmatic expression of such a policy alternative. So I think those are some of the issues. But I also just wanted to indicate that as a commission, I think in that financial year, we also participated, you remember the discussion about the youth pledge, whether we do need a youth pledge or we don't. I mean, we also created discussions and dialogues amongst young people so that we get input from them, whether really what is their view around the issue of the youth pledge, which we then submitted to the Department of Education. And I think also the input around the policy guidelines on teenage pregnancy, because what young people and young women were saying in the meeting with the minister was that we don't believe that the policy is the solution, because you can't therefore say you are going to give maternity leave to young women, you know, to go and stay at home, because the fact of the matter is that when they are coming back, they are not going to be able to go and study again based on the policy framework that you have. So these are some of the issues out of that which even the Department of Education acknowledged that reality and even said they would want to partner with the Youth Commission to have sort of a campaign on later pregnancy across provinces. But the challenge, once again, is our financial capacity as a Youth Commission to even support those particular initiatives. And even when we went to the Department of Education and said, this is the commitment of the minister. I mean, this was done in 2007, but it was difficult for us to get the resource. The department said, yes, we acknowledge that the minister made the commitment, but at this point, we do not have enough resources to support that particular campaign so that we can go and deal with the issue of learner pregnancy, because we're saying we need a conversation also with the families and society in general. But some of them, especially in the Eastern Cape, it is because you are finding that girls are heading households. So that is another reality. They don't have role models, they don't have mothers, nor even grannies that are able to teach them, you know, life skills about their sexuality as young women. So these are some of the programs that I just wanted to mention. And just lastly, on the employment issues, I think also in the National Youth Service is one element. Well, the National Youth Service has got, as part of its program, the three components, the service, the learning element, and also the exit opportunities, which try to ensure that young people out of the National Youth Service, those that can be able to get jobs. But what we'll do in that report that we'll also get from the National Youth Service unit, that out of those young people that have been participating in the National Youth Service, how many of them have actually gotten jobs, because that has been also another serious challenge of exactly getting employment opportunities. But I think those are just a few issues that I wanted to raise. And lastly, just to indicate that the issue of the cooperation with the Flemish, I remember with the CEO before she left, we also, in the discussion with the Flemish government, indicated that we've got a serious problem with this particular cooperation, especially in terms of accounting, because of the fact that another challenge is the fact that their financial year and ours is not the same. Now, when we get to be audited, some of the things which I think Commissioner Rico was raising is the fact that we are still waiting for monies, but those monies are being spent in that particular period, because somehow we need to ensure that the program continues. Just to make a direct example, there was a point where these centers that we're talking about have already submitted their business plans and they needed the money. But the money, we're still waiting for it because it needed to still be approved with the Flanders government. So we needed, therefore, as the Youth Commission, through our own budget, then subsidize that particular program. Now, in terms of audit, that becomes a challenge and it becomes a problem. But then you can't therefore explain that to the centers and say you can't get your money because for them, they want to start the program. They've submitted the business plan. So we even said to them that we'd need to find a way because this thing, in terms of audit, is giving us problems. Even with the former minister, we raised this matter and even said maybe we'd want to see a way where this particular corporation is either taken somewhere else because it is creating problems in terms of auditing of the Youth Commission, notwithstanding the fact that we still even have to manage, and even the budget of managing this particular corporation is not enough, and even the Flemish at this point are not budging. They are increasing all the other elements, but they do not want to give us more money, and now we ended up having to use our own money to support managing, because we are expected to manage all these centers, and we do not have enough capacity, and even National Treasury is not giving us money to support this particular program. So I think that's one issue that I just wanted to raise in the questions that we asked. Thank you.
Honourable members, sorry. Thank you for the responses that we received. Members, are you satisfied with the questions? If the members have an opportunity, I will give an opportunity to Honourable Moss, go ahead. And then Honourable Andrew.
Thank you, sir. Jefferson, on the youth agent. How far is the process now? I'm just thinking of this instability picture that you gave to us, obviously not a nice picture. I think some members of parliament also feel like it. So, how far is the noise? And, you know, what do you think should be done to go through?
Thank you. Yes, thank you. I think that important question is, given the impact, the uncertainty in terms of the intellectual exodus that has occurred, what is your retention strategy approach amidst all of this, because clearly the merger, there will be some time before it happens, but also importantly, that skill that you have been able to accumulate will be indeed needed in this new agency of entity, one can put it in that way. So one is a little bit concerned that you have this great flight of intellectual capacity that is leaving you, and surely, I mean, the CEO was not long there, for that matter, you say. So, obviously, what are you doing as the head of the NYC to allay the spears and clarify the uncertainties to keep the ship intact, you see, because you need sailors to hoist the sails, etc. You can't steer the ship on your own. Because in the end, you will be left with nothing else but yourself. You must stop that particular process. Yes. And then lastly, the whole issue that the chairperson of the Youth Commission has emphasized, the flight of students, learners, leaving the school at grade 11, just the leap of a second chance. Now, I'm just thinking, thinking out loud, this Karigure campaign, 6.7 billion rand the government have set aside to improve our illiteracy levels. What is the relationship between the NYC and the Department of Education who's creating this particular campaign? Because one would imagine that the last proportion of those trainers would be should be used, and a large percentage of those who would be in need of that kind of training would certainly be used. I just hope there is indeed at least a connection or a relationship between the NYC and the Department of Education. I did say largely, but currently this question has been posed on it. Yes, indeed, it's shocking to hear that only a sixth department indeed has complied with establishing the director. It is a shame, and one would hope to see that you would put into practice the state of name and shame, because I think in the Department of Labor, the minister threat many employers have taken him very, very seriously. But the question I want to ask is there any relationship between the VCS and yourself with regard to ensuring the department's compliance by setting up these directors? Thank you, Chair. I'm talking about the VCS in the presidential office.
Because other honourable members brought it up, so I thought I'll add my question here as well. I'll sneak it in. Regarding the agency, I wanted to end off with this. For example, for the next few months, what's going to be happening? I'm not sure with the Parliament's programme what it's going to be look like, and we're not too sure whether we'll be coming back to come and give us another briefing. So I thought I'll just ask questions now. Before the Act, and it's been signed by the President, but you as the NYC, what have you done to speak to the National Treasury with your concerns? What has been done to put things in place? You know, as Honourable Andrew is saying, there's a lot of fears out there. What are you doing to allay these fears? If I understand correctly, when the bill was passed, National Treasury said that, you know, staff mustn't feel, you know, there mustn't be a lot of instability, okay, and what has been done, has there been any relationship between you and National Treasury since the passing of this bill? The work, obviously, of the National Youth Commission cannot stop, so obviously, when the merger happens, what plan is there in place to make sure that the programs that still need to continue will then be continued by this new entity? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will just address one question, and our Chairperson will address the rest. Indeed, it's extremely challenging to retain people because the nature of mergers is of such that you lose the most valuable people if they feel that they cannot be accommodated in a new institution. So if you look at our financial presentation, we don't have the budget to counter offer people to stay, because that would be your first step. If someone wants to leave, they get a better position or a new position, one would try to counter offer to match that offer another department would give them. Now, inherently, we have repeatedly report to this portfolio committee that the Youth Commission does create better employability of our staff, because other departments spot their capabilities and they then poach them from us. So in terms of retention, I think the statement that was issued by the minister in the presidency this week have helped a lot to allay fears that staff will be transferred, those who are remaining will be transferred to the new agency. The challenge is attracting the most critical skills. Like we advertised last year for the CFO who resigned, we didn't get the right skills to be able to employ people at that level, because people don't want to come at that level. Chartered accountants don't want to come, and they don't know whether they will have a job 6 months down the line. Secondly, how do we then offer contracts when we sign contracts? So I think I think that this committee can help a lot in terms of ensuring that we put proper transitional mechanisms in place, because even the bill is not very clear on the transitional mechanisms. And our concern, while we welcome the establishment of the new agency, we will lose a lot of knowledge and intellectual capital, like the Honorable Member has highlighted, which will not go into the new agency. And that's why we are trying to document all the programs so that it can be transferred to the new agency, and then either or to departments that can take that line function forward. Thank you.
Okay. In addition, I think the Commissioner has indicated really in terms of the challenge of really trying to retain people at the moment. And I think this process, since even we started as a commission in 2006, there was a convention in 2006 in June that spoke about the merger of the commission. So this cloud of a merger has been there since. So you can imagine, especially at a staff level, the whole issue of not knowing what is going to happen, and therefore, you know, people looking for jobs somewhere else. But I think since the process now has officially, you know, been kickstarted, and there is an act also which I think was finalized, and the President signed the act on the 23rd of December. Now, what is happening at the moment is that the Minister has made the statement about the act being signed, or the bill has been signed, and now there is going to be a meeting, I think next week, where the cabinet task team. But what has happened, in line with the question that was asked by the chair, with our link with the National Treasury, is that in the cabinet task team that was established, it was ourselves at Umkhonto Youth Fund, the National Treasury, the PSA, based on the personnel implications of this merger, which were sitting in that particular task team with the Youth Desk, now, and the Department of Labor. Now, what happened is that before the signing by the President, we then made input after both houses, the NCOP and the National Assembly, had then adopted the bill. We then sat and looked at the bill in terms of the administrative implications, and there were a number of challenges that were spotted, including some which were the DPSA also mentioned as implications for personnel. But one of the positives also, which was indicated, I think, in the input of the DPSA, was the fact that the Youth Commission staff are part of the public service, and therefore there is an obligation to ensure that those that staff is protected into the process of the agency, notwithstanding, obviously, that the agency will have to decide, depending on how they look at what will be the functions that will be put together to serve the particular mandate. Now, that at least has made our staff just to sort of have that small hope, you know, in terms of the process. But going forward, there is also a due diligence that was started by the National Treasury in late last year, and this year we had submitted all the information. It has been indicated that by February, a report of that due diligence, which was done on both ourselves and Umkhonto Youth Fund, to look at what we have, the programs and everything, so that we can be able to ascertain the matter of all the assets to the agency. So that those are other processes that are unfolding, and hopefully the meeting on Tuesday will therefore look at the details. But we also in the task team suggested sort of a roadmap that must be able to lead us to the agency itself. But I think it's only through that particular meeting will therefore understand that with the signing of the bill by the President, to what extent are the provisions or those suggestions are going to be sort of realized by cabinet. But also the very important question is what Commissioner Rick was raising, is the resource or the money for the merger. Because one of the things that we have raised as a task team from the onset was that national treasury must be brought onto the process specifically to ensure that government provides money for the measure, because measure is a process also needs some kind of financial investment. And you can't therefore expect that the two institutions that are being merged are going to finance the measure, because correctly, the institutions at the moment continue to exist and they must be able to meet their own financial obligations. So they do not have in their budget money for the measure, and I think it's going to be another challenge which we are going to see with this specific measure of the Youth Commission and also the Youth Fund. But also I think some of the challenges have just been a communication, which I think will be sorted, and I think we'll raise the matter with the minister, that it is important that communication is managed, both at the political level and also in terms of the institutions themselves. Because when things get to be said in media, which I think the one example Commissioner Mugiba was making, they create more, even more uncertainty to the staff. To an extent, even ourselves, we have then said that there should be staff forums where staff is able to raise their concerns through the administration, and those things get to be communicated to us. So the staff do meet, they then do raise some of the concerns that they have. But I think the reality of the matter is that it is a very challenging process at the moment. And that's why we then said, in terms of the road mapping exercise, we would like to both be able to communicate not only to our own internal staff, but also to the public, you know, messages that are going to be able to assist everyone else, and especially youth organizations, to understand what exactly is going on. So that currently, I think, is the status of the measure. From here, I think going forward, I think it's a question that continues, you know, to find expression in everyone's, even ourselves as ECCO, we're always sitting to look at, we're even saying in that one meeting that we'll be doing a program audit where we're able to document all the work and the programs that we've been doing. And therefore, we must be able to say, through the process of the transition, where are these programs going to be located? Because we must at least be guaranteed that if the agency is not going to be able to undertake those programs, at least those programs, either they are going to be handed over to government departments or to some partners that are willing to be able to dispense of those programs. And the concern that also was raised through the interdepartmental committee, because with the work that we have been doing with them, you know, they raised the concern which they don't know exactly what now is going to happen, because they were trying to get into the gear, reporting to the Youth Commission and doing all these other things, and even therefore influencing the kind of work that they are doing in their own department. So what is going to be the linkage now of the interdepartmental committee and the agency itself? So these are issues that need to be sorted out as part of the process. But we are also made aware that a board is going to be put together. It's going to be advertised by the end of this month. That is a board that must therefore start the process of the transition. And I think more information will be able to get, because obviously that process is going to be led through the parliament. I am not sure whether it's going to be done by the JMC, the committee which has always been looking at bringing together the executives or the leaders of these youth institutions. So we are not sure at the moment, or is the ad hoc committee which was developing the bill. But we are made aware that there is going to be an advert towards the end of this year trying to get people. For this month, yes, end of this month, there is going to be a board, there is going to be an advert requesting people to nominate people into the board of the National Youth Development Agency. But that's why I'm saying at this point, we're not even clear whether that process is going to be undertaken by this committee or there is going to be another committee, that parliament, because this has been said that that is going to be a process that's going to be led by parliament. But where exactly, we do not know. So it's all those uncertainties at the moment that also create a lot of problems, because we also do not know what becomes our position, whether we'll be participating in the board or what exactly is going to be happening, in terms of the fact that even in the app that the president has signed, it doesn't indicate when is the agency going to be effected, because that date would therefore immediately repeal the existence of the Youth Commission. Now, that on its own is another challenge, because you don't know until when is the commission going to continue. But if it doesn't say, then it leaves the Youth Commission to continue with its work and its operations. And even that board, if it's going to be there, what is going to be the relationship of that board with the two institutions? So
I think it's another gap and another area which we would even like if the members of the JNC can also assist us in just getting that information or that getting that clarity. But we will be asking in the meeting, I think the minister has committed to next week on Tuesday. And obviously, if there's anything, we'll therefore brief members of the committee. I think the last issue which was raised on the Gharigude literacy campaign, there is an NYS program that is currently being considered by the National Youth Service Unit, which we are participating in, to ensure that young people also do participate in what Honorable Member Madera was asking in the Gharigude program. But I know that through the Interdepartmental Committee on Youth Affairs, when the whole program or the campaign was started, the Youth Commission did mention that we would like to see majority, because there's a lot of number of people that are going to participate, majority of people that must be recruited to be young people, and the Department of Education did commit to that. It's only us, I think, we would need just to now follow up to see, out of the people that have been recruited, how many young people are participating, but they did commit it, because also we saw an opportunity even there that young people can get to participate in that Badlock Gharigude campaign. But I think we would make a follow-up, and also I think this National Youth Service campaign that is linked to the Gharigude, which currently is already being discussed by the Department of Education and the National Youth Service Unit, will also ensure that young people do participate. Thank you.
Okay, honourable members, you're satisfied with the responses? Any other questions? Any other follow-up questions? Nothing. Okay, no more questions. I would like to say thank you to the chairperson and your team from the NYC. Thank you for your presentation. Like honourable Moss have said, we are just like you in a very unstable times, but we have empathy with you, and we can't predict what the future would lie in, what is in the future. But thank you for answering the questions, and then after your meeting next week, we will do some follow-ups as well, and I will also will make a follow-up with the Chief Whip's office where does the JNC take these matters forward from here, and I will do a follow-up then on this. And I really hope that this instability is not really too bad. Like, we do not want everyone to jump off the ship and leaving you alone, like we, Honorable Moss has said. But I myself have said, and the parliament program, there's no certainty what is continuing with the parliamentary program, but thank you for your work. Yes, we have our difficulties that you've been through, and we do understand that, and we know that you are passionate and committed to the youth development, and that's important. And with that encouragement to the youth development, and we hope that that will continue with the existence of the youth agency. And our recommendations from Parliament to the new Parliament, our recommendations would be there for the, what you as the NYC have said, what you've wanted, and the new parliament needs to take it up. Thank you for your work. Thank you for what you've done, honorable members. Thank you for your participation in this meeting. Thank you so much. The secretary just informed me, lunch is served in the old assembly at 1 o'clock. You are welcome to join us for lunch. Okay. Thank you. This meeting is now officially closed.
planning for the new year. I think only for a few days. I don't want to speak about it. A lot of them